Everybody, this is Kevin Purcell with the Theotech Podcast this morning, and I am joined by our good friends.
Excuse me. Hangouts, I need your attention.
Sorry.
And
it's going to be one of those episodes.
Attention, and we need your attention. If you're just joining us, we're starting a little bit late because my computer totally froze and I had to reboot. And now Rick is begging for attention. So
it was my computer. It was not me. I turned off. Evidently, it doesn't control that because I put on Do Not Disturb here on the MacBook. But evidently, the voice alerts still occur. So I'll have to watch that closer.
Well, this morning we want to talk to you about a couple of things. Just real quick, here at the top. I got an email this morning that I found kind of interesting, and that is BibleSoft, the makers of PC Study Bible, are planning to come out with an updated version that will also include a Mac version. And, of course, that makes sense business-wise, I think, because a lot of people are going Mac. It seems to me, as I talk to my fellow pastor friends, even people who have been longtime Windows users are buying Macs and getting into it. So a lot of us, I include myself, are dual-platform people. If you throw in Android and Chrome OS, I guess I'm a quadra. I don't know what the word for that is. But anyway, what do you guys think of this? My two partners here sort of jokingly said, are they still around? And I think that's part of the issue, and that is that, you know, BibleSoft hasn't gotten a lot of attention because they haven't updated their software in I don't know how long. It's been, more than maybe a decade since they've updated to BibleSoft to PC Study Bible version 5. So what do you guys think? Is this a good move?
I wasn't joking, but I also don't mean it mean-spirited or competitively at all. I really did not know that BibleSoft was still around. I never hear anything from them. Of course, I'm not on a mailing list, and so I had no reason to, to know. I think I had BibleSoft software a long time ago, maybe the 90s.
I remember it, they were DOS.
Yeah.
That was like literally my last picture of PC Study Bible. It was a DOS-based program.
I knew they were in Windows, but like I said, they just have not been on my radar.
Yeah, that's been a long time ago since, I personally don't remember them as a DOS program myself. The first version I had ran, of course, on Windows 3.1, and I started with QuickVerse, way back in the day when it was DOS, and it was on. I think I've told this story before. It was on 5 1/4 inch floppies, and when you did a search for God, you had to, to go to the next section of books, you had to insert the next disc, and that was always fun, but. I get lots of information from them, and really, it's a pretty good program for Windows users. They're always putting out new content. I get emails, probably monthly about new content that's come out, or maybe they're just, pushing stuff that they've had out for a while already. I don't know. But you don't see anything here on the newsletter about it. Let's look over at their blog. I don't see anything on the main website. But
it's a nice website.
Yeah, it looks fairly decent. So we'll see. I hope it comes out soon, and I've contacted them and haven't heard back yet whether we will get a guest to come and speak to us. Here their blog, the last post was June 5th, so obviously they're not real active on their blog here. But so we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if we can get a copy of it to look at it and play with it, and hopefully someone will come from BibleSoft and extol the virtues of their new program. I'm most interested to see the Mac version.
It'll be interesting, Kevin, to see if they go with a native application or if they do what Logos did and do a WineLib. And I think that if they do the WineLib version, that's going to be a big mistake.
Logos isn't BibleWorks is.
BibleWorks did it. I'm sorry. I got to flip. Logos is native. Logos did it right.
That too.
it just, if they, you know, WineLib at this point is that that ship has sailed a long time ago. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with it. And I find it interesting. Like Bible, BibleSoft is off the radar. And when you see the kind of like the BibleSoft where people come together to talk about all their different applications and they compare the features and stuff. When was the last time BibleSoft was even hanging out with all the cool kits?
It's been a while. Like I said, I haven't really used it consistently. Since the last release, I used it for about a month to review it, like I do, you know, every new version that comes out. And and you know, I liked it. It's just that, you know, by that time I already had both BibleWorks Word Search, and then also I had just gotten into Logos. I think if my mind is not playing tricks on me, because it was I got into Logos about 10, maybe 12 years ago, something like that. But at this point, you know, there's a lot of competition with really great quality, amazing features between, like, you know, of course, President Company included, Accordance more and more impresses me. You know, I've been trying to use it more and more than I have in the past, probably because of you, Rick, but also just it's just fast, and I like to be able to get into my Bible study quickly. Of course, Logos is always coming out with new stuff and lots of amazing whiz-bang features. It's hard to, you know, go toe-to-toe with them on a bullet point feature list, but as far as usability, you know, they're great, as well as, you know, if you're a Windows user, Word Search and BibleWorks are awesome programs. And so there's just some, there's really great Bible software, and then of course Olive Tree is getting better all the time. Sadly, it's almost funny now, Olive Tree's Mac version is now the one that's been left in the dust, and it's going to be a number of months before we'll see something new from the Mac side of it. But it's just interesting. We don't want to spend too much time on it, but Antoine, you just joined us. So we announced that BibleSoft has today announced that they're coming out with a new update and for PC Study Bible, which will include a Mac version. And so you have any thoughts on that, Antoine, that you'd like to share with us?
I don't even use those platforms. So I don't use PCs. I don't use Windows unless I'm beholden to do so. So it's not really something that I could comment on. If it ain't been on a Palm Pilot or later, I probably haven't used it as often enough to really get a good opinion to it.
Yeah, I know that they don't have a mobile version, and that's, you know, that if they really want to stay relevant, they're going to have to go and add a mobile version of it at some point, or an online version that has a good mobile presence. You know, that'd actually be my preference, that everybody just make a really great online version. I know you've said that Accordance has no interest in doing that, but that'd be my personal preference, that everybody make the very best quality online version that runs on a Mac, a Windows PC, a Chromebook, Android, iOS, all the same way. That's nirvana, in my opinion. But anyway, we'll move on, because there's not a whole lot to talk about until we actually get a look at it and see it. What we really wanted to talk about before we got this news this morning was, you know, backing up your computer. Let me ask you this question, guys. If right now, in this very instant, your computer got zapped by lightning and you didn't have another computer to use, could you run down to, I don't know, Best Buy, Staples, wherever, just quickly grab something off the shelf, plop it on your desk, and within a period of time, we'll say anywhere from 10 minutes to 2 days or 2 weeks, would you be back up and running, ready to write your sermon for next week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I could pull up everything from a backup that's current from yesterday.
And I'm not sure if you're frozen there, Antoine. I'll add that question to you about your mobile device. If your iPad or phone or whatever it is that you use to do research, biblical research, if it froze on you, would it be ready to go within, you know, you run down to the AT&T, or I don't know what carrier you're on, but you run down to the whatever store and pick up the latest, you know, whiz-bang mobile phone, would you be up and running within a short period of time? Yeah,
We'll take that as a yes.
If Peter got hit by lightning, I'd probably be hit with it as well. So, I'm a great.
You can just barely make that out. So if Antoine's computer gets hit by lightning, it doesn't matter because he's no longer with us. It's basically that's his concept. So
all right, well, let's talk about how that happens. Who wants to go first? What do you do to make that happen, Wes?
I'll go first. Well, first off, I have in my house, I have a time machine backup or a time capsule, so I'm just. You know, it's just a live backup constantly going. And that's actually for mine and my wife's computer. The kids are, I'm not too worried about them right now. And then I also have a time machine drive up in the office at ABCNJ. So when I'm there, I plug in and it does, I have an offsite backup that way. And through Cult of Mac deals, I recently picked up a subscription for, you know, real cheap and off, and actually for my wife and myself. And we did, I got the Pogo plug back up to the cloud. So I have that all backed up now too. So I basically have three different backups, and it would be cool, Kev, because for the most part, if my system completely crashed and went down, but I still had my iPad, I'd be able to get on through the Pogo plug app and still access all my stuff without even waiting. I'm doing that as a year experiment. I don't know if I'm going to keep with Pogo Plug. I might go to Crash Plan because I know they encrypt the stuff that's on the drives up in the cloud. But you know, hey, it's been really nice, and when I'm on the road, I can access everything even if I don't have my computer with me. So.
All right. So let me just ask you some questions just to clarify what you're saying. You have backups on your Mac using. What is it again?
Well, I have Time Machine, and then I have Pogo Plug.
My brain couldn't bring back Time Machine for some reason. I needed a Time Machine backup of my brain to get that back. Time Machine is a pretty nifty thing. Essentially what that does, incremental backups of your computer, what, like every hour, is it?
Yeah, it's every hour, and they store like every day, like a day stamp shot then every day. So it's a pretty nice system, and it's just automatic. It's brainless, which is always good for a backup. What's that?
How do you? Let's say you your Mac is dead. You got to get a new one. You put it on the shelf or on the desk. Plug that drive in. When you start it up, doesn't it ask you?
Oh yeah, it says you want to start from the Time Machine backup, and you go blink, and it just off it goes, and it does the whole thing. I've actually done that when I
have. How long's that been?
Surprisingly, not that long. Sometimes it depends if you're on a network drive. And you're on a slow network, it'll take longer. If you plug in a direct drive, really not that long. And I've actually done that with systems where I've just wiped them and I've backed up, or, you know, restored from my account backup. And literally, I don't think I've had any glitches with that in the times that I've done it. And it's been pretty fantastic. It's also great when you get a new Mac because you can just automatically import all your settings, even if your Mac doesn't die. So it's pretty cool.
Now, Rick, I know you're on Mac as well. Do you use Time Machine for your backup?
I do. I use Time Machine, among other strategies. I'm kind of backup paranoid, so I have multiple backups. But I have a Time Machine backup that's away from home, and that's on purpose. You know, because if the house burned down, it wouldn't destroy my backup. And so I've got an office away from home that I'm at four or five times a week. And so while I'm plugged in, like what was said, you know, it's brainless. You don't have to think about it. I just, when I sit down with my laptop, I plug everything into it and it just starts backing up. And so I have that backed up. And then I've got another external backup that is on a hard drive at my parents' house in Louisiana. So when we travel to Louisiana, usually anywhere from 3 to 4 times a year, I will back up. I'll back up my files and my wife's files to that hard drive, and that stays there. Mm-hmm. So you know, if the city was nuked and I still survived, I could go get my files. and you know, I do the same thing for my parents. I back up their computer while I'm there, and I keep that hard drive here at my house. And so that, you know, that's kind of the ultimate emergency. You know, it's not going to be more recent than you know, maybe it might be 3 or 4 months old, but that's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. And so then, of course, the other aspect too is I have probably about 35 gigabytes of data that I need to be cross-platform between Macintosh and Windows. I have that sitting in OneDrive, mm-hmm. And then I've got some that I've got. I don't know how much, I could look it up. I also have a large amount of data in iCloud Drive. And, of course, there's going to be a new iCloud Drive app that's in iOS 9, which will allow you to access those files more easily in iOS, better than the strategies that are currently in place. But, yeah, I mean, I could be back up and running pretty quickly. It would be financially hard, you know, if an accident happened and it wasn't covered by insurance or something. But I could certainly gain access to my files. Even with those ones that are in OneDrive and iCloud Drive, even from another person's computer, mm-hmm. which is nice.
And for those on Windows side, I'm showing, I just did a search real quick on Microsoft's website for a feature called File History, which I believe was introduced in Windows 8 or 8.1. This is a video. I was hoping it would show something, you know, like step-by-step screenshots of it, or because I'm on a Mac this morning. I don't have a lot of familiarity with Windows file history, but have either of you used that?
Yeah, I've used it. Because I use it with my Acer R7, and I don't do it as faithfully as I do on my Mac, because most of the files that are on the Acer are really in OneDrive anyway. But occasionally there's things like, for instance, I edit video for work sometimes on that Acer, and so I want that backed up. So I plug that in usually when it nags me that it, you know, there hasn't been a backup or that drive hasn't been connected in so many days, and I just let it do it then. All right, but so it works like Time Machine.
Mac or Windows, use either Time Machine or try out this file history.
Yeah.
Is there another option, say, on the Windows side that you think is better? Any of you have any recommendations that way? I know you two are mainly Mac guys, and Antoine has sworn off computers altogether.
I can't remember. You know, there's lots of third-party solutions, and I even used to use them before these were built into the operating. You know, the fact that they come with it, I know that they're not always Time Machine and file history may not be the most full-featured, but they're easy to do and they serve the purpose. And I'm cheap on those kinds of things. I just use those, but I know that there are good third-party applications out there for backup. I just haven't used them in so long, I don't remember what they are.
All right, that's a great first recommendation. What about, you know, having your files in multiple locations, quickly accessible, so that you don't have to restore the computer? For example, I have, like probably you guys, if you're like me at all, you've got more than 2 or 3 computers now. But I've got multiple Macs and I've got multiple PCs. How do I get my files so that I can easily access them on any of those systems? For example, you know, a Time Machine, I'm not going to be able to restore that to a Windows computer, and vice versa for file history. What are some solutions that you guys recommend, and what are you using to be able to access your files anywhere?
Well, like I said, I use PogoPlug, which is a cloud backup system. But there's a whole bunch of options that are like that. Some of the more popular ones are Carbonite, which I used to love, and when Lion came out, it just became an utter resource hog, and so I dropped it and never went back. There's CrashPlan, there's Backblaze. You could use something like, you can even buy a lot of storage off of Google Drive or Dropbox and kind of use that as an automatic backup. And what's nice about these things is that they are cloud-enabled, and they run in the background, so it's live updated. So once your data is up there, it's just looking for changed files in the directories that you say are going to be backed up to their cloud, and it just automatically does it. It's really nice. I really like, one of the things that I tell people to do, especially because I have a computer that's got limited storage on the actual computer itself, is that for these cloud-enabled apps or cloud-enabled services, make sure that it allows you to back up external drives. So, like, all my photos and my Lightroom library and everything is on an external SSD, and if I lose that, I'm, you know, up a creek if I don't have it backed up. And so with PogoPlug, I have that all backed up to the cloud, and it's working. And I know that CrashPlan will do that. Carbonite didn't used to. I haven't checked in with them for a while, but you know, that's it, it's almost, it would almost be just a normal thing now. And I really like that. And again, there's apps for like mobile devices, or you can log in on the on a website, and you can navigate all your stuff just kind of like a Dropbox type thing. And it's nice to have literally all your files wherever you are.
So now it's PogoPlug, you know, photo backup, phone, tablet, computer, unlimited. Video backup, phone, tablet, computer, unlimited. What about personal files or, say, program installation files or, you know, music? What about that?
Yeah, it's all, it basically, it's you tell it what directories that you want to back up, and it backs it up. So, like, all my documents and all my all my other stuff, and like that. It's not a snapshot, like, time machine, so I'm not going to get back to all my apps for the installation files and things like that. Like, my Accordance library is all backed up so that I know, like, I'll be able to get back to my workspaces and things like that. But it's it really is just for your files. It's not to take a snapshot of the machine. It's just your data that's getting backed up. So I'd have to reinstall all my apps, which I'm perfectly fine with. I like that better anyway.
Do you know about this family plan where it says 97 cents a month for family members? Is that so that they can back up their files and you don't have to mingle the files together? Or is it you can only back up one system? Have to pay for extra systems.
No, what happens is, and we're what my wife and I did is because it was a we got it through a Cult of Mac deal, so we got like an insane amount off. So we actually have two accounts, one for her and one for me. And next year we'll keep my account, we'll drop hers, and we'll add the entire family onto our plan. And we'll if we keep with PogoPlug, we might move to something else. And it is every person who you add to your account has their own access to PogoPlug, and all the information is kept separate. And it's like I said, it's automatic.
Do they still have the? Do they still have the? I reviewed PogoPlug when I first joined Notebooks.com, and at that point it was a little device that you plugged into your network and plugged up to two USB. Drives into. Is that still what you get, or is this entirely software based now?
This is entirely software based. You can get a PogoPlug adapter and make that part of your backup solution. So you're what's nice about that is if I've read up what it's doing, when you have a PogoPlug local on your network, it'll upload stuff to just the local drive, and then the drive will throw it out to the cloud. So it happens a lot faster, at least from your perception, and then you get a local backup and an external backup at the same time. But I don't have that. I'm just using the software because the Time Machine is my local backup.
Yeah, it used to be this weird garish pink looking thing, and I always thought, what a weird looking.
It really pink. Was odd looking.
That's so strange. Yeah. All right, Rick, what do you use?
Well, you know, I mentioned already that I use both OneDrive and iCloud, and for backing up the most important files, especially files that I need quick access of. And both of those have websites. You know, you can go to the OneDrive website or the iCloud website and access those there. You know, and then I also we barely mentioned photos. You know, but I've got something like 36,000 photos going back, I don't know, well over a decade since we started using digital photography. And not only do I have those in iCloud because I've now moved from Aperture to the Photos app, and so those back up automatically, and they're on all my devices. But I also turned on my phone, OneDrive will automatically back up your photos on an iPhone. I assume they will on an Android phone too. And so that, and it's so quick because, you know, I go through photos and I delete the photos I don't want. Those photos that I don't want, if I were to ever delete something by accident, they're already in OneDrive. Mm-hmm. And so I keep that folder, that photos folder, from syncing to my local computer, because there's no need to have that, you know, duplicated. But I know that that's always there if something, heaven forbid, were to happen to, you know, iCloud Drive, my photos there. So I've got yet another backup there as well. I was doing that with Dropbox. Dropbox will do it too, but I think I only have 3 gigabytes of space, and so I ran out of space very quickly there. But if you've got the full terabyte deal, that's yet another option.
Yeah, I'm showing some photos in my camera roll on my OneDrive. That's one of the primary tools I use, is OneDrive. Of course, this was for the Amazon Echo. So yeah, I think that OneDrive, you know, I'm interested in PogoPlug. It's a $29 option. That's incredibly inexpensive, and so that might be a really great solution for people who don't use Microsoft Office. But OneDrive, if you have an Office 365 subscription, comes free. Well, you know, it's part of the deal, and it's 1 terabyte. Is that right? They say unlimited, but it says 1 terabyte when you actually log in and look at it.
I guess if you hit a terabyte, they would give you more.
Right.
That's for Office 365. And, nice.
Yes. That's and you can put anything in there.
Right.
I don't have it, so you can see it. Let's see. I'll stop screen sharing. It runs a little client here, and I'll share my entire screen and then get rid of that. So you know. But you see up here, can you see that up at the top, a menu that just dropped down?
Mm-hmm.
OneDrive. Yeah, see, it shows I've got 43 gigabytes used out of 10.2 terabytes. So
nice.
Limited. Nice. You know, there's no way I'm ever going to use 10 terabytes, but they say unlimited, but then you see that there's that limit. But that's essentially unlimited.
So
you run this in the background. Yeah, and of course it's backing up, downloading 20 files, 320, 380 of 420. See, that's coming down pretty quickly, which it's a lot faster than this, but you know, I'm streaming video in HD.
Kevin and Rick, right on now. OneDrive, can you determine what drive or what folders you're going to sync?
Yes, you can completely control that.
Okay, good.
You know what the thing that frustrates me with all of these kinds of OneDrive, iCloud Drive, none of them do exactly what I want them to do, which is probably why I'm on more than one service. But you know, the way that OneDrive had the placeholders in Windows 8.1 is how I wish that it was on the Mac. And see, it's never been that way on the Mac. And so I have to actually tell it on the Mac, do not download these folders.
By that placeholder.
Well, you know, the way they had it in Windows 8.1 was that you could see all of your files in a directory. You know, you could open up a folder, you could see all of those files, but they may not be there. If you had enough hard drive space, they might be there, but you could tell it either way. But you could see what it was, and you could double-click the file, and it would download and open usually pretty quickly if you had a good connection. And so it was very convenient, and they did away with that in Windows 10, to where now, you know, it's like the Mac version. You have to you can control which folders download, but you can't see all of your files if you don't have enough room for them without going to the website. And so, you know, I wish that the placeholder solution was available for both Macintosh and Windows, whether it was in OneDrive, iCloud Drive, but I don't know of a solution that's doing that on, you know, that's across platforms, and that's really what I need, because I now have so much content that I can't fit it on any particular mobile hard drive.
Rick, here's one.
We are going to fix that, by the
way. Yeah, but here's one for you to check out in the meantime. You've heard of File Transporter?
I have not.
Okay, File Transporter, it started as a Kickstarter, and you can get either a tall little cylinder type thing that has a drive built in, or it's called a Transporter Sync, which is like a little round hockey puck thing, and you plug a USB drive into it. And it's called File Transporter because you can use it like just having a Dropbox at your house, and then you kind of just use it like Dropbox. But if you put one externally, say at your, you know, your parents' house or your office, and you plug in a drive there and you connect them, it keeps the two drives in sync. But what Transporter did was really cool. if you put things in the transporter folder, it's like Dropbox. It's on your local hard drive, and then it's backed up to these external drives. They have a little shortcut in there that's called the transporter library, which is like having a network drive mounted to your system. So you get the anything that's in there is not downloaded to your system until you access it, and it puts it into RAM for use. But you have all the placeholders. So I've actually been considering getting a transporter sync just for my house and putting it somewhere else, just so I can start putting my stuff in there, and I don't have to worry about it.
I'll have to check that out. You know, I've experimented like with plugging a drive into my airport router, and I can access that in most places, but I still have issues where I'm in places where the Wi-Fi is just really lousy. If Wi-Fi was great everywhere, that would be a good solution. So yeah, I'll have to check into the file transporter.
Yeah, but I really like OneDrive because, you know, this is my Mac, and it's my OneDrive folder with my camera roll. And then if I go online, I see this thing. And it's really fast. I'll take a picture. I've got OneDrive set up to automatically back up my photos on both my iPhone and iPad, as well as my Android phone. And I'll take a photo, and then I don't like the photo, or you know something messed up, or maybe I accidentally took a screenshot of my hand or something, you know, because I had it over the lens, and I'll go try to delete it before it backs up, and it's already backed up.
You know, that's what I was saying. You know, it deletes all those. I mean, it keeps all those folders that I've deleted because it's faster. I think that the OneDrive photo backup is faster than iCloud distributing those photos out to all your devices.
Oh, iCloud is terrible. It's so slow.
Yeah.
Really slow. That's cool. What's it cost for a 365 subscription right now for a year?
You can get it like $79 or so on Amazon.
And then you get a terabyte of storage on top of that? That's not a bad deal. Where did Kevin go?
I don't know. He may have frozen up again. We're still live.
Oh, no.
if you have access to an educational discount for Office 365, it's 4 years for about the same price. I think $69 or something like that.
Okay.
And
that's
4 years, but only two machines, and then multiple mobile devices.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Because my wife can do that.
Yeah. That's a really good solution if you only need two machines.
Can she buy two subscriptions?
No, I've tried that. Well, you can, and you can assign them to different registered email addresses. And so I've actually done that. But the problem with that is that address is going to be tied to the OneDrive folder that's associated with that Office 365, and that can become problematic.
No, I mean, if I buy it for like my kids' computers, then they're set.
Yeah,
that's worth looking into. Yeah. I don't know. All right, hey Kev, welcome back. No, I can't hear him.
Yeah, we can't hear him.
Here.
There you go. Oh.
Problems?
There, we couldn't hear you when you first came back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this for some reason this morning Chrome is and this Mac are not behaving well together, and so this is my Mac that got lightning struck, and so there might be something going on that it's finally dying on me.
Gotcha.
But anyway, well, Antoine, we haven't heard much from you. What is your personal file backup solution?
I have a lot of stuff, but I don't back up a lot of stuff. I made a decision that I would put a calendar and contact. I would let like Dropbox, OneDrive, Flickr, wherever else they go. Public photos pretty much are the only thing that I let get backed up in multiple places that I do and don't control. My music files actually sit on a phone that does not touch the internet, which has been a nice, neat new philosophy of mine. I have a Nokia N9 that has 64 gigs of space, and it's become my car radio slash my off-site storage. Being Linux-based, I have a bat file that's able to run backups from other devices. I connect to those other devices via Bluetooth and pull down files if necessary. And then I also use BitTorrent Sync from either my iPad or my Android devices to that N9 when I need to do or want to do really a backup of anything big. In regards to, you know, how do I back up my other mobile devices? My phone is my wrist. There's nothing on here except my calendar and contacts, and that's already duplicated on other devices. So if this were to get struck by lightning, I'd lose my arm. It'd get back up to speed as soon as it get connected back online. My iPad device, I do not store anything on it at all, actually. The only images that are on my iPad device that stick around are images that I may download when I'm doing contract work for other clients. So they're usually stored elsewhere, and I download them to my iPad or to whatever other devices I'm working on, my Chromebook or what have you. I try to do as much off-device storage as possible in places that I control. Therefore, I can better monitor, you know, where stuff is going and who has access to what. I've been a big fan of Federation for a long time for that reason. I don't use any automated backup programs other than if this and that. And that's kind of really about it. It's a manual process on my end. You know, it'd be nice if it was as simple as maybe a time machine or something like that. But there's really no need for it. Not to say that I'm using the internet as my hard drive. I just don't trust any of the companies that run internet as a hard drive type stuff.
Well, let's to get some understanding from this. By the way, let me just share this real quick. This is a device that the iTwin. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this. No one's ever heard of it probably, but I did a review of it a number of years ago and haven't used it in a while just because OneDrive and Dropbox and all of those do such a good job for me. But if you're like that, you're very nervous about someone else storing your files, this might be a good solution. And what this thing does is it plugs into your computer. They've got it for Mac and Windows, I believe. And essentially what it does is it turns it into a remote networking tool automatically without the configuration and that kind of thing. I'll show you the actual device here. You know, here's the device, and it comes apart. So you actually start by putting it plugged in together. You plug it into your computer. You make sure you have the software downloaded, and it sets things up for you. And then you pull it apart, leave one of these in one computer, plug the other one into the other computer, and you immediately have a remote connection through the internet or through your local network, depending on which you know solution you're, which state you're in. And it's kind of a neat little device, and if you're nervous about letting Dropbox or Microsoft with OneDrive or Apple with their iCloud Drive have your files, this is one way to keep that from happening. One thing I could see someone using this for is hand one of these. I've got a kid off in college. He sometimes calls me up and says, "Dad, I'm freaked out. My computer's not working right," and this allows me to remote access into his computer. And it also allows us to transfer files between each other, those kinds of things. So it's one solution. I don't personally use it just because I prefer OneDrive. I don't have the hang up over Microsoft having my files. If they break in and steal and start reading all my files, maybe they'll get saved. Because most of what I have is Bible study and sermons.
The neat thing about it, looking at their website, is that the two keys form a VPN.
Yeah, right.
So not only that, you're encrypting your internet access when you're out like a coffee shop or something, and it's all done via private key on that device.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a neat thing, and you know, I've got two of them, and this is the old one. I'm not sure. I can't remember what the iTwin Pro does that the iTwin does not do, but they both work. As far as I know, I haven't plugged them in quite a while, but they just sit here for that time when I say, boy, I really could use, and then I say, oh, yeah, here it is. I've got that solution. So just to kind of put a summary statement on all of this that we've said so far, number one, it's a good idea to do incremental backups so that you can quickly get it back, either on Windows or on Mac using, you know, file history on Windows, Time Machine on Mac. It's not a bad idea to do either manually or automatically some kind of off-site backup, and that's an important solution. I like what Rick said. You know, you use, because if Microsoft goes out of business, you know, all my files are on OneDrive. Now they're on multiple computers too, so I'd be able to quickly go and find another solution. But you know, if I lost all my computers and Microsoft, I'd be in trouble because I don't do that third option that you talk about, Rick, and that is to sort of manually give your files to someone else somewhere far away from you, which I probably should do.
Someone you trust.
Someone I trust. Like, I ought to probably buy a cheap, not cheap as in poor quality, but inexpensive a backup hard drive and put all my stuff on it and then mail it to my dad, you know, every so often, and then when I go up and visit, give him another one, or, you know, whatever, those things like that, because he's in Milwaukee, whereas I'm in North Carolina. If North Carolina blows up and I survive, Milwaukee probably won't, and vice versa. But
that's where File Transporter comes in handy, because you can essentially do that without having to travel.
Okay. That's another option is if you can find a way. Well, this iTwin would do that. You could do it remotely.
Yep.
You could send him the other part of the disk and say, here, plug this into a computer that you don't mind and add it, you know, put a folder there. My dad would probably be willing to do that for me. But here's another thing, and that this is the other issue, and that is your software. Where do you get that? Increasingly, software companies are allowing you to download so that if you lose it, you can just go to, say, Accordance and download the program, or Logos and download the program and download all your books if you needed them. My fear about that is, for example, you know, Kindle, I had some Kindle books, and a lot of people had, what was it, 1984, the book 1984?
Yeah. And they deleted
it. Very ironic that they took 1984 away from people. You know, you just lost it all of a sudden. You know, I haven't backed up any of my Kindle books. I mean, they're all with Amazon. And so that's something I probably should do is download all those and back them up somewhere. Maybe even if it's got DRM in it, rip the DRM from it.
But yeah, I used to do that, but I don't keep up with it anymore.
Yeah. Every time I buy a Kindle, because my e-reader is a Nook, so if I have to buy something and it's only available Kindle, right in Caliber and off it goes and convert to EPUB.
Okay. So, you know, what do you recommend as far as, you know, there are programs, the only way to get it, for example, BibleWorks, they sent me an ISO, and I can back up that ISO in those multiple locations. But let's say you have a program on disk. What do you do with that CD? You know, that some program that's still stuck in 2005.
Wow, I can't even think of what I have. It's on DVD.
Is there anything like that? I don't have anything right now that I can think of that I still
have. My Adobe suite, because I think I have CS6. And just haven't had any need to go to the Creative Cloud version. That's still on CD or DVD.
Okay.
So I don't have it backed up. I mean, if something happened, I could just make a copy of it and back that up. But if something happened to it, I'd have to go to Creative Cloud, I guess.
But you know, it's a good idea, even though you can always go to Accordance or Logos or, you know, whoever, Olive Tree or whoever, to download, it's a good idea to back up. For example, you know, we talked about PC Study Bible here at the top. I got that review copy of PC Study Bible 5 before I moved to our present house, and in that move it got lost, and I contacted them and said, look, I reviewed this. I'd like to open it up and take a look at it again. My thought was, you know, I never cover PC Study Bible now Ministry Tech Magazine, used to be Christian Computing. Maybe I should install it and use it a little bit and then write an article of some tips on how to use PC Study Bible. And they basically told me, well, sorry, you'll have to buy a new CD. You know?
That's always nice.
And so, you know, I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. you know, I don't get paid to write for Christian Computing or Ministry Tech, so I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry, I'm just not going to cover your software. And so, you know, they kind of lost an opportunity to get some publicity for their program. But, you know, in fairness to them, they were giving it to me for free at the beginning, and it's right. My responsibility as the customer, because they make it very clear, this is the only copy you're going to get. So it's my responsibility to protect that in some way. Here's what I do. I don't. If I do have a CD, no one has given me. I've not bought a CD installation of software in years. But if someone does that, what I'm going to do immediately is put that in my computer and rip a backup of the ISO and then back. And then most computers today will allow you to mount an ISO without having to use the CD or DVD. And so that's what I do, and I recommend you do that. Also, I know it's possible on a Mac, and I can't remember because I haven't done it on a Windows computer in a long time, but if you can't find a cheap piece of software that will back up that, I think Windows has that built in, but I'm not 100% sure of that. I know Mac does using, is it the disk?
Disk utility?
Disk utility, yeah.
Backs up ISO files. So is that what you guys would recommend, or do you have
what,
a better...
Create a disk image and throw it on a remote hard drive?
Yeah.
I do that sometimes. Sometimes even for downloaders. Like, we use FileMaker Server and are using FileMaker for ABC on J, and every time an update comes out, I download all the installer files for the platforms that we use, and I just throw it in a file or a folder on the Office Mac Mini, and that becomes my distribution center. One of the things, Kev, that I think people need to, even more important than having the file, because 9 times out of 10 you can go back and get that, especially in this era of digital distribution, is to back up your license keys. Because if you're buying software that's not out of the App Store or someplace where, you know, oh, it's already tied to your account, and you don't have the license key, you are in big trouble. And
I keep that in Evernote.
I actually have it in 1Password. So that's where I keep it.
Yeah.
Find something to keep it and back it up. I sadly have them all over the place.
And, you know, I failed to mention Evernote, but I've got a lot of my work in Evernote.
Yeah, Evernote's a good place to do it. But I keep most of those. The majority of the place I keep them is in a text file just backed up in my Documents folder. I do have a bunch of program installation files for Windows and for Mac. I've got one folder called Mac Apps and one folder called Win Apps, and I'll put the key with the same name as the installation file or the installation image.
The cool thing in like 1Password, I'm sure that LastPass and things like do this for licenses, is that you can actually, it'll have a spot or a field in there for the link to the download. So, you know, you put the key in and you put who it's licensed to and everything, so everything's there, and then you just it's a live link to the download. You're blink, and it just goes to the latest, and you get it.
Okay,
that's cool.
I mean, that's really cool.
That is neat. Now, Rick, you, I wonder if you would say something about, is any of this different for a church than it is just for your personal use?
Well, you know, as I was thinking about this, you know, to me, well, it's bad enough that people don't think to back up their own files, but churches are even worse, I've noticed. And there's been so many times over the last 20 or 30 years that, you know, even going back to when people were using computers that just had floppies and no hard drives, you know, where there would be someone at a church, a minister or friend or secretary, who would say, my computer has quit working, I can't get access to any of my files. And I say, did you make a backup? And they say, no, I don't have a backup. Or they have a thumb drive that they keep their most important files on, and that thumb drive is lost. And that's even in 2015, that is still a regular occurrence. And you know, not only do individuals need backup solutions like we've been talking about, but churches need church-wide solutions. Because now, you know, in the past, church records were kept in print copies. You know, our church where I attend, Simpsonville Baptist Church, Simpsonville, Kentucky, was founded in 1830. We have some of the original documents going back. They're kept in a very safe place. But some of those original documents going all the way back. Well, you know, in the last few years, because we've moved to computers for keeping track of things, I mean, you think of things like business meeting minutes. You think of your church bylaws, financial records of giving and so forth like that. At one time, that was all kept on paper, and your biggest danger was fire, which is a very real danger. But today, the biggest danger, I think, is that you have no backup copy when that computer dies. And churches often will tend not to replace a computer until it dies. And so, you know, it's just like it's not a matter of if, but when this is going to happen. And so I think it's very important in this day and age that, you know, a pastor or a church administrator thinks through every person's computer that's on staff. If for nothing else, for the next person who comes to that position, that they have the important documents that they need for that, and just to prevent loss of financial information and so forth, there needs to be a plan in place. And like I said, I think churches are even worse than individuals about this.
Yeah, I think you're right. The lost USB disk. Problem. Let me just say one final thing. I'll let you guys have a final word if you've got something else you wanted to add to this discussion, but this is actually one area where Chromebooks really, really excel. If you can find yourself using a Chromebook for the majority of your work, this honestly is going to be an excellent platform for you regarding backup, because every Chromebook is essentially backed up everything that you have on it. The minute that you log in, it starts to back up, and the minute you log off, it's all backed up. And so if you lose your Chromebook, you know, I've reviewed probably a dozen Chromebooks over the last 3 years, and every single Chromebook, I put my password and username in and password in, and within 2 to 3, 5 minutes at the latest, if I've got a slow connection, I'm back to where I was on the last Chromebook I had. It all looks the same, same background, same configuration of icons on the desk. All my files are where they were before. And so this is one thing that I would recommend if you're really sensitive about this and all you're doing is office documents and online stuff, a Chromebook is that's the solution. Go get one. They're cheap, first of all. Even a really great one, like the most recent one I reviewed, the Acer Chromebook 15, which I really love because for the first time you get a big screen Chromebook. It's a little heavy, but I don't care about that much. That's an excellent solution. So, anything you guys want to throw in sort of as a last word on this topic? Go ahead, Antoine.
The thing I would throw in, actually, I wouldn't trust software to stay the same or to even be readable, but to make sure that you're using open format for the content in those programs. So, you know, you guys were talking earlier about Kindle and not having your books. At some point, the EPUB 2.3 bastard format that Amazon is using is going to no longer be readable by anything. You know, so making sure that if you're going to export or have a backup copy of things like that, that they're in open format so that you can go ahead and utilize that content later. Or in my case, I usually make the decision of not saving the content, but saving my transformations of the content. So instead of saving my Kindle book, I just prefer to save my Kindle notes in the locations where I made those notes in the book. And I save that in a TiddlyWiki file, nice open document format, so that from anywhere else, and that's a format and a file structure that'll grow with where computing grows. So, it won't be a 35 in the age of CDs, if you will.
That's a great point. That's an excellent point, because sometimes we have content, just like the old days of, you know, I've got this 3.5-inch disc, or as I mentioned, Quickverse at the beginning of the show, on 5.25-inch discs. You know, I don't even know if you can buy a 5.25-inch disc reader anymore. If you can, it's not going to be easy, and it may not even be cheap anymore because of how rare they are. So that's a great point. And also don't use CDs or DVDs as your primary tool of backup, because I did that, and within about 2 to 3 years, cheap blank CDs or DVDs start to degrade. I had right. all the pictures on DVD or on CDs when I first started burning CDs, and there are probably about 300 photos of my children when they were in their youngest ages that I will never see again. And yeah. that is because I backed them up. The first digital camera I had, I would always back up every single, you know, collection of discs to a CD thinking I was good. And I went 1 year and decided, you know, I need to get all these off of CDs. This isn't a very good backup format. And some of those CDs, I couldn't read them. And I tried every single thing I could come up with. And I couldn't find a single way to read those files. And so there were about 300, I think, photos of my kids when they were, you know, Daniel was probably an infant, and Michael, who's 4 years older, was 4 or 5 years old. None of it. And stuff from my church that I was at the time, all gone. So
That's what a lot of people are going to face with photos, because their photos aren't saved in a secure place. You know, and of course, I know people who delete photos off of their phone to take more photos, you know, and so we live in an age where we can have a lot more photos, you know, because we don't have to have them developed, but I think we're gonna have some blind spots in some places. To pick up real quick on something that Antoine had said about open formats, I will admit up front that I don't do this. But LibreOffice came out with version 5 yesterday, and so if you really want to make sure that all of your documents are in an open format and probably will be accessible years from now, you should check that out. Libre Office.
Or you can all just write in Markdown or RTF.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Markdown or RTF. RTF is probably the easiest for people who don't want to learn something new, but Markdown is just as good if you don't mind learning some new
plain ideas. Text. Brilliant.
And for word processing, I admit that I went back to, well, you know, I start everything in Evernote now, but I went back to Microsoft Word. I feel strongly that we'll be able to read Word documents, at least during my lifetime, because it's such a standard.
They're also open. You can hack them and get in and get the text.
Yeah. Well, right. The Open XML, is that format improved anymore?
I don't know.
Just shaking his head. No.
So, to me, it's fine, but you know, I'm not the guy who worries about such things.
Well, the problem is with Microsoft's Open XML format is that there's places in it where, like, in the spec it says as like Office 97. I'm like, gee, that's helpful. So it's still partly a binary format.
I'm confident that I'll be able to open those files.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And well, you know, I think we've fairly well covered the topic for the most part. I wanted to mention one last thing, and that is, you know, we talk a lot about Bible software, and your Bible books, if they are increasingly being downloaded, you know, you talked about having them in an open format, Antoine. That's one area where we are really in trouble, is your books that you've gotten in your Bible software, almost none of those are in an open format. So, you know, I don't want to be critical of the companies, but all of them have a real problem in this area, that if Logos goes belly up, most of my library's gone. I'll have a very workable library that's pretty advanced in Accordance and Olive Tree, and PC Study Bible, QuickVerse, and other locations. But, you know, out of every $100, I've spent $80 of it on Accordant or Logos over the years, just because that's the first real advanced piece of software that I got. And so, you know, we're all just kind of messed up. Back up those files, but if it ever comes to a point where you can't install Logos, then you're basically done. I guess there's ways you could export that stuff, but that would be an incredibly laborious job for someone with a large library like I do in that context. And do you want to put on your Accordance hat, Rick, and answer that from the publisher's side?
Yeah, you know, well, and I'll give two sides to it. You know, on one side, the example that I think we still remember is Zondervan's, what was it called, Pradis, P-R-A-D-I-S, platform, they just discontinued it, which I won't go into reasons why, but anyway, they discontinued it, and those folks were just stuck. You know, they could continue to run that software as long as that software, would run on the current operating system, you know. But mm-hmm. you could eventually come to a time where it just wouldn't work anymore, and you don't have any support. On the other hand, for all of the Bible software, major Bible software companies, there are distinctions in the file formats because each company gives its own value to that. I mean, we aren't giving you plain text in accordance. We've gone through and we've tagged that text according to very specific fields, and so that makes it. And Logos does the same thing. Olive Tree does the same thing. That makes it impossible for those files to go back and forth. You know, part of it is you have faith in the company, that the company is healthy and the company is going to be here long term, and the company has succession plan for its leaders, and ours certainly does, and I assume the others do as well. You know, to me, it's still more secure than the physical book. You know, I knew professors personally at New Orleans Seminary who lost their entire theological libraries in Hurricane Katrina because all the professors' mm-hmm. offices were on the first floor. And you know, that was a real turning point for me mentally, because I was already using Accordance and some of these other software, but I had this whole room full of books. And I thought, you know, these books are susceptible to fire and flood and theft. And I just, at that point, I kind of made a turn, and I started investing more in the in digital books. And you know, there is always the fear that, well, what if I can't read them years from now? But I need them right now, and so, you know, I use them right now, and I invest my money where I think it can be most beneficial to what I'm doing. Some things like, you know, converting those Kindle books to an EPUB format is a good idea, like what Wes talked about earlier. I've done that some before, but you know, I kind of think that Amazon's going to be with us for a while, I'm not overly concerned about that. But yet, nevertheless, it is a very real issue, and it's something to continue to discuss.
Well, with something like Amazon, the problem is that, you know, if you move, well, there's stories of this, of people moving to another country, and they go to buy a book, and Amazon discontinues their account because they're in violation of the EULA.
Oh, wow.
And they lose their entire library. Or the 1984 example. So if I buy a digital book, I'm putting it up somewhere where I can get it.
And you. By the way, Accordance does not have the ability to come in and yank your books. Now, if we have the ability to turn off the account, which I think, Kevin, you ran into one time just from testing purposes, having installed it so many times. But all you had to do is make a phone call to fix that, and I even know a way around that, which I won't say on air. But there is a company that I won't name names because it'll sound anti-competitive or whatever, or overly competitive. But you know, there is a Bible software company that does have the ability to pull books from your library. You know, off air, I could give you an example of how this works. But that's something to keep in mind too.
Yeah, you're going to have to give us both those tidbits as soon as the show ends.
Well, he doesn't want to tell you, but I know that Logos, if they take it from your library, you can't use it because they go through an activation process. Every time you start up Logos, it, you know, contacts home. If it doesn't contact home at least once in, I think, a 30-day period, it shuts down, I think it is. I'm not 100% sure of that, so don't quote me on that. But and if they remove a book from your library for whatever reason, within 30 days that book is now gone if you don't figure out a way. I think I'm right about that. Again, I can't.
Rick is not going to confirm or deny that you're correct.
I'm not going to confirm or deny that I'm correct either, because I'm doing this from memory. And I may have just said something that's totally wrong about Logos. If someone from Logos sees this or hears this and I'm wrong about that, if you contact me, I will more than be willing to correct it next week at the very front of the show, so that
there you go.
I don't want to disseminate any false information, but I think that that's correct.
Rick will give us the tidbits of information and specifics, and then I'll just blog on it this week, and it'll be great.
Yeah, but I'll
have no idea where I got the information.
At the same time, I'm too critical of Logos because they've made it very clear that they never will intentionally remove a book just, you know, willy nilly. They say that they're going to have a really good reason for removing it, and some of those good reasons are you sold it. That's one thing. Or if they found out that you, back in the old days, there was a real easy way to pirate Logos books.
Amazon thought they had a good reason, too, when they pulled 1984.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. I think they shouldn't have done it.
Amazon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, sorry, I know. Activation process for the content that I have in my application, there is no way on earth I am giving you that. That's why I strip all the DRM off my EPUBs. Because Barnes & Noble do the same thing. If your credit card that you bought them on expires, you lose access to your books. Like, you can't download them anymore. Because, like, oh, this isn't it. You have to go into your Barnes & Noble account and put in the new credit card information. I'm like, nope, not it. Everything's stripped. I have it. It's mine.
Well, listen, guys, we're coming up a little over an hour now, and so unless someone has something, you know, really juicy they want to share, a tip or something along these lines, anyone? I think we're all clear then. Well, I think this is a great discussion, and we really appreciate those of you who have watched through to this point, whether you're doing so live. I know there's a few of you doing that, and then also if you have watched it at a later date on our YouTube channel, it goes up fairly quickly, within minutes to an hour or so, on YouTube. And if you want to find the links to all of that, either YouTube, iTunes, the audio version, most podcast apps because of Stitcher Radio, you can get an audio version on non-iTunes related content. And so you do that at theotech.com. Go to theotek, or just use my name, kevinpurcell.org, and you'll find it there. As well, and often it shows up some other places, like maybe Painfully Hopeful or This Lamp. At least you guys have links maybe to us, don't you? Ministry Magazine. Follow our Twitter accounts or other places. I'm K.A. Purcell. Wes?
I'm at Weslow on Twitter.
Rick?
I'm at This Lamp on Twitter.
And Antoine?
Mobile Men Mag on Twitter and Pinterest.
All right, great. And I'd like to ask you to just one last plug. Go and check out the new Ministry Tech magazine. I think things are going in a good direction there. The Christian Computing magazine changed its name, and my monthly column just came out talking about Accordance's Virtual Bible. And the next one is going to be a list of some pretty cool things that you can do in Accordance. I'm supposed to be submitting that today, and I'm not finished with it, so that's what I'll be working on after this.
We're quoting you in next week's newsletter, by the way.
All right, cool.
And it will list the magazine name. It'll say Ministry Tech Magazine.
Good. Glad to hear that. All right. God bless y'all, and thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week here on Theotech Podcast.